Thank you very much.
So is that something
that makes sense? We have to date on the contribution. And on our right we run. Thank you very much for coming. I'm Dick Adams. I'm the co-chair of the Library Committee and have the privilege of sort of introducing Dr. Peter Brent, who is the 2010 Australian Parliamentary Fellow. Dr. Brent is an experienced political writer. He writes and has written in The Australian, The Age, and The Australian Financial Review. So it means he's right across the board in that sense. He undertook his PhD at the Australian National University on the topic, The Rise of the Returning Officer, How Colonial Australia Developed Advanced Electrical Institutions. He has a political bulb, which he is continuing to update while he's employed in the library. And I've been asked by some colleagues whether today's lecture is going to be electronically available to them. So that was interesting, I thought, in itself.
Yeah. That was, I think the answer, yes, to the library website.
Okay, the library website. I'll pass that on at question time. He's proposed that project is the changing relationship between federal politicians and the media in the internet age. He has noted that Australia is the only Westminster Parliament to have its press gallery located physically within inside the Parliament, and that is said to produce a unique relationship. I don't know if we don't have a bar in this parliamentary building. They tell me that there were some pretty unique relationships established in the bar of the old Parliament House between the media and everybody else that works there. So I think it's a very good opportunity to look at new ways that the world is communicating, and in particular many politicians now use Facebook, some use Twitter, and during the 2010 I'm sure other innovations will no doubtlessly arrive. And as one of my colleagues said, who said he couldn't get here today, but was interested that he has a Twitter and has a Facebook, he says not many of his own electorate, he thinks, follows him on those processes. But he said there's a lot of journalists seem to follow what he does, and he doesn't think that's in the best interests of himself. But he's continuing to engage in the new age. So I asked Peter to give us his lecture.
Thank you, Mr. Adams, and thank you all for coming. I'm supposed to be telling you things, but I really hope that you tell me things afterwards. I welcome ideas and comments, and because this is still in the very early stages of my project. I'm developing it, so it's still being formed, so I hope you, some of you will help me. The Twitter election, I've just sort of taken that that headline because I've seen it thrown around a bit. It's a nice snappy headline. Twitter is the latest of the new media, of the social media, of Web 2.0. It's the one that people are talking about. So the story is that this will be the Twitter election. Twitter will be used by both the journalists and the politicians and the public at large, and it's a way of communicating with each other and trying to shape stories and so on. So it's the use of the new media by the federal political players in this election year. And if I please let me know if I'm not speaking loud enough, etc. The new media, not all of it is that new, or it's developing pretty rapidly. URLs have been around for a while, and most politicians have one of these. Everyone has one, for example, alp.org.au/Joe Smith. Everyone has one of those, and I think probably most of them have their own dickadams.com.au, where they put their biographies, what they're doing, and perhaps a link to, if they have Facebook or if they have Twitter, a link to that. And it's a just a way of communicating what they want to communicate. YouTube, of course, was pretty big in the 2007 election. There was a lot. There were a lot of stories about it. There were those campaign YouTube clips where there'd be one YouTube clip, and then there'd be another one outside that, and there'd be a never-ending John Howard commenting on the Labor Party's YouTube clip, and then Kevin Rudd commenting on that, and someone else commenting on that forever and ever. So there was a lot of YouTube in 2007, a lot written about it and a lot talked about it. Facebook, MySpace, etc. are like websites but more active, more fluid, more interactive. A lot of pollies have them. Not many journalists have them. Twitter is the latest thing. It's like SMS, like text messaging, except you can text message the whole world, provided the world. You can text message to whoever in the whole world is interested in what you've got to say, which is obviously, it depends on who you are, I suspect, and also what you've got to say, but really who you are. If you're Hugh Jackman, then people are going to follow you. If you're Kevin Rudd, people are going to follow you. And these labels, Web 2.0, Web 2.1, there was a great talk just here a couple of weeks ago by Nick Gruen about Government 2.0, and he described Web 2.0. I think it was fantastic elaboration of what Web 2.0 is. Government 2.0, I'm not too sure about, but Web 2.0 and the interactiveness of it all, and the way everyone sort of joins together and forms this evolving idea or this evolving thing or this evolving website. So it's called democracy, pure democracy. That's a bit over the top, but it is very people all coming together and contributing their bit to whatever this thing is that they're contributing to. I'll come more to that in my specific case, and it's social networking as well. You make friends, you meet friends of friends, you choose to become friends with this person or this group and not to be friends with this or that group. Twitter, which is what I've mainly looked at so far since I arrived here 3 or 4 weeks ago. I'd never tweeted before, had avoided it. Like a lot of these things, you sort of avoid it until you feel you really have to jump on board. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, just quickly, it's like text messaging. There's a limit of 140 characters. People choose who they will follow, and if you follow someone, everything they SMS to the world appears on your Twitter page. And people can do it. I only do it on my computer, but others do it on their mobiles, Blackberries, etc. And then they go around and do it over lunch and sort of wherever they are. The people I follow are the tweeting federal politicians. There are 54 of them currently. And the members of the press gallery who tweet, there are 22 of those that I've counted. And I tweet a few others. Of course, tweeting, whether you tweet or not, is just a binary measurement. Either you tweet or you don't, but of course, some people tweet more than others. Some people tweet more meaningfully than others. Some of these politicians opened a Twitter account a year ago, and that's it. They haven't done anything since. And I'll just show you what my Twitter page looks like quickly, if it will connect. But maybe I won't. I'll come back to it. My Twitter page, if it was up, you'd see
the latest of the people that I follow, what the things that they've tweeted. So there are journalists. There's a particular journalist, Latika Burke, who's a 2UE journalist, and she's probably the most famous of the tweeting journalists. Certainly the most popular, I think. This is a picture from my tweeting website of some of the people I follow. Anthony's not really anything to do with this, but you've got to follow Anthony. Julie Pizzetti is a former journalist who's an academic at Canberra University, and she's really into all this stuff, so I'm following her. Michelle Grattan is the only doyen press gallery person who tweets. She doesn't tweet very often. Well, she doesn't tweet manically like some do, and various others. That's Latika Burke there. Now, there's a lot of hype around all this stuff. Like the technology itself, the narrative, the whole story about it, the things that people say about it, the way people go on about it, comes from America. The hype about the internet in general comes from America, and I think it is more applicable there than it is here. For example, the importance of blogs in America, Matt Drudge and so on. Blogs are much more important there than they are here. But the story tends to be transplanted to here and to be used in a way that is not really appropriate. And I think that applies to a lot of this new media. There is some over-the-top discussion of it in the US, I think, as well. The Obama campaign is seen as an example of the success of new media, and I'm sure there's a lot of truth in that. But really, I don't think it had much to do with the fact that he won. It obviously had a lot to do with the fact that he won the Democratic primaries, but did it really lead to his victory in the presidential election? I don't know, but it's a good story. And the fact that he won and he was into all this stuff means that people can equate to and write their articles and write their papers and so on. But in some of my research, I saw that in the 2004 presidential campaign, in the weeks before the election, there was a bit of a story going about John Kerry and his use of the new media and how much more advanced the Democrats were to the Republicans in the use of all this stuff. But John Kerry lost and George Bush won, and that story stopped. So had John Kerry won, we would have heard a lot about how wonderful the use of the new media was. I mean, that tends to be the way in politics. The winner is judged to have been vastly superior at every single aspect of campaigning, and the loser was hopeless in every regard. So in this building, I sometimes grab people in elevators and the coffee table and just ask them what they reckon. And the journalists tend to be journalists and tend to like to talk and talk about things and tell stories. And the ones who tweet reckon, see it as the great new thing. Obviously, the ones who don't tweet are like anyone who doesn't tweet and are a bit, a little bit puzzled about it and maybe a bit not really sure what the big deal is about. And it sounds a bit yucky that people are sitting there describing, what they had for breakfast, and there is, that is what 99% of it is, actually, a lot of too much information. The politicians, the few that I've managed to grab a word from, including in the committee the other day, tend to see the old media as still the most important. If you can get a good Laurie Oakes story happening, I mean, that's more important than tweeting to getting something going on the internet that is probably only followed by political tragics anyway, who are generally not swinging voters. So these are the impressions, my initial impressions. Again, some
early observations, politicians. I mean, really, it's so new for everyone that everyone's just sort of trying it out and seeing what it does. And especially if you're a politician in an election year, you don't want to put your foot in it. You don't want to have something hit the newspaper headlines the next day because you've said something really stupid on Twitter. So they're generally quite careful, check their spelling. Not all of them, but most of them seem to check their spelling. They might run it past a staffer, I suppose. You know, is this okay to tweet? But having said that, I mean, there is some. You know, they are obviously sitting there. You know, as we've read in the newspaper, some of them are sitting in Question Time tweeting. I think that's quite dangerous for politicians, especially in this country where we have such rigid party rules and such rigid partisanship that's imposed. It's you know, it's quite a brave thing to do, or stupid. Most interesting poly that I've come across, I mean, that's most interesting of a not necessarily interesting bunch of tweeters. People are interesting, but their tweets are not necessarily. Scott Morrison, who sort of has a, he's quite, he has a bit of a way with it, and he has a bit of a tete-a-tete with the union guy, Paul Howes. They sort of have a go at each other, and it can be quite entertaining. And yes, he checks his spelling, or he's a good speller, you know. And there's possibly a bit too much. I'm waiting at the airport. My plane is late. But some people are interested in that. Journalists, they are obviously just to less fewer inhibitions about what they, how they tweet and what they tweet, and they seem to do it for social networking. I mean, they seem to be, it's a bit of a free-for-all. They tweet, you know, Abbott said this, Abbott said that at the press conference. Now, some of them do tweet about their babies and so on, but most of them stick to work. And the general, I mean, the thing about it is that if you choose to follow half a dozen of these journalists, then you can sit there and watch what they're saying about things in real time. I'm just going to try that. And for example, in particular, televised events such as Question Time, Insiders and Q&A, there's just a whole list of comments going. Some of them are funny, some of them not particularly funny. It's sort of like sitting in a room with people who have no social inhibitions and just say the first thing that comes to them. you don't have to look, so that's all right. And, I mean, in terms of Question Time, which is, you know, some would say has been quite debased over the decades from the original grand intentions that it had, it trivialises it even more, really. But, you know, maybe that's just inevitable anyway. Tweeting journalists, Latika Burke, Crikey's Bernard Keane and Sam Maiden. I went to Question Time, sat in the speakers gallery the other day, and these three were tweeting. The first two on their computers and the third one on her iPod. And as I said, Michelle Grattan is the only doyen who tweets, I think, as far as I know. So, a few stats at the moment. 54 of them tweet, 38 of them are in the House of Reps and 16 in the Senate. Those stay up to 54, which is good. And 15.7% of Labor MPs tweet, 34.1% of Liberals, so that's a pretty big difference. 100% of Greens and no National. Average age of tweeting MPs is 47.2, MPs overall is 51.6. Don't ask me if that's statistically significant, but these are data about a whole population, so I mean that is a fact that there's a four-year difference, which I think is something. In terms of gender, about the same. And the Australian Electoral Commission has four categories, geographic categories, that they put every seat into one of. So every seat goes into one of these categories. And as you might imagine, the more in a city you get, the more tweeting the MPs are. That sort of is intuitively as you'd expect it. But Labor and Liberal move in opposite directions in that way. So rural, inner urban Labor MPs, fewer of them tend to tweet. I mean, I have to look at this data further, but there may be other explanations, but that's, the Liberal, inner urban Liberal MPs tend to tweet a lot, by the looks. And in the lower house, overall, and excluding retiring members, because retiring members, I think just about all of them don't tweet, excluding them, that top line has the percentages of each party. In marginal seats, if you define it by 5% or less margin, Labor is tweeting more there than elsewhere, but Liberals are tweeting less. On the other hand, Liberals seem to be into their shadow cabinet tweeting, whereas Labor shadow cabinet people don't tweet very much, and something similar in the other rest of the executive. So that heading is that sort of internet language. Why do they do it? And these are my questions. I mean, why do they do it? What do they think they're doing? What are they doing? What do they think they're doing? And these are things I'm going to find out by surveying people, surveying the MPs, surveying the journos, at least trying to talk to them, trying to get some info out of them. Ian McAllister, who runs the Australian Electoral Study and also runs the candidate survey at every election, has kindly agreed to my inserting a couple of questions in his candidate survey, which is great, and I'll also do my own. But his is such a well-known product that hopefully we'll get a lot of responses. And the tentative structure, at the end of this, I have a published monograph that is also available in PDF. I may have accompanying CD, internet site maybe. I'll see what is possible. That's the structure. Tentative structure, but I'm learning. This is very early days, so these are my ideas so far, and I'd be very interested in any suggestions that anyone has. I'll just try one more time. No.
Just type Twitter into the address bar.
It's actually all right. It's just down the bottom.
Yeah, you're on the wrong window.
Second tab. That's it. You've got to open the read. If you just go to the bottom of the screen, the second tab.
Peter said he came to learn.
We could have talked earlier.
There
he goes. I'll just refresh.
What's your account name?
Mumble Twits. That's a long story. So there's Latika. There's got to tweet this attending. Yes. So what? Somebody here is a tweeter. And Steve Fielding, he's the only independent who tweets. Malcolm, I've discovered that Malcolm was following me a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, this is fantastic. This is the most famous person who's following me, and then I saw that he follows 17,000 people. I just don't know what that would look like, but it would be absolutely madness, wouldn't it? Misha Schubert, who's, Kate, a couple of hours ago, someone impersonating Kate Ellis said, try this diet. And it was a link to a diet, and she came on a few minutes later and said, I've just been hacked and someone's pretending to be me. So that's what happened the last couple of hours. So, I'll leave that up. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Peter's if anybody has a question, please feel free to... please.
Hi, I'm here. I work for Kate Lundy, and I just want to point out that there are huge amounts of value from the stuff that we've been doing with Twitter, because it's not just about what am I eating and when's my plane coming, but trying to put it to work and trying to engage with people very directly and use it as a very basic level of peer review around ideas. So I'll send you, we've got a whole bunch of research that we've done around the world on this that I'll have to send through to you, and you're very welcome to use it.
Great, thanks. Yeah, I've been in contact with Senator Lundy, and one day we're going to
sit down and figure it out.
I was just wondering if your stats on Liberal versus Labour, it's about 34% versus 15%. Maybe the party in government has more to do. In opposition, having spent 12 years there, you do have a little bit of time sometimes. Yeah, and you're probably not being that relevant. But that's a longitudinal study.
Nick Stewart. I follow that point up because certainly amongst the press gallery journalists, I wonder if, for example, part of the reason that the so-called the genuine doyens of the press gallery don't actually need to tweet is because they've got their own methods of communication, whereas people like, for example, Julie Pizzetti, who you refer to, who of course is at the University of Canberra, a former press gallery journalist, but now to some extent marginalised in that she doesn't have a regular opportunity to express her ideas on the political in the political field, and so this is offering her a platform. I was wondering if you could comment on the extent to which you feel that it may be, as Dick says, the dispossessed, the people like the opposition, who feel that if only their message could get through, everyone would agree with them, and suddenly there'd be a mass rising or something like that.
Yeah, that might be overstating. Yeah, I mean, Julie Pizzetti, I'm following her because she writes about this stuff, so she's not really in the same category as the press gallery journalist. But certainly, yes, if someone rings up Laurie Oakes and says, mate, tells him something, he's not going to go, oh, great, I'm going to tell everyone, he's going to save it for the news, whereas... Yes, I'm sure there's more value in this information sharing if you're not privy to this information. So, yes, I mean, sharing your thoughts with the world is a pretty weird thing to do. I do it a little bit, but just on my website, but only specific thoughts. But yes, it is a symptom of being disempowered. Yeah, sure.
Please.
Thanks, Dick. Look, as an opposition MP, I suspect that if the PM's travelling very well and you've got corporate solidarity, there's not a great deal incentive to tweet. I mean, you're standing behind a successful leader and you've got your position. Whereas for the opposition, it's often, you can attack from all different sides and try sort of, jokes and groups and it's, I would suggest that when the tables turn, you'll just see oppositions using Twitter a whole lot more than the government, that you just get yourself into trouble if you tweet something wrong. Okay, so the stakes are higher potentially, and you have, while you're in front and there's corporate solidarity, you're best not to tweet. Yeah. I wonder if there's an element of that. Look, secondly, I'm a marginal MP. I would love to get Twitter working for me, but I find it incestuous. I only tweet for one reason, and that's that I look like a shy and a tweeter, and people know that. And I just try and keep my numbers up, so I look like I'm a tweeter, but there is actually no electoral advantage for me in it, and I can't even find a way to make it electoral. But I can say the talk today is not about Facebook, but Facebook is a monumentally powerful tool. And there is extraordinary capacity there to create non-political pages and harvest and fish huge numbers of not only emails, but mobile phone numbers. And once you have the mobile phone number, they don't have to follow me. I fish them and can sort of harvest huge numbers of mobile phone numbers, and then I just can dock them onto a simple piece of software, and I can be SMSing hundreds, if not thousands, of people directly when I choose to, with a simple piece of software downloaded onto a gadget. So I just find Twitter completely absurd in comparison.
Thanks for your honesty. Thank you very much.
just a comment. Yes, Facebook. is, I will certainly be looking at Facebook. I've just been concentrating on Twitter in the last couple of weeks, but I'm really interested in that, and I'd really like to get more info from you. In terms of, and I'm sure that's right about if you're in opposition, you're more likely to do it. As the stats showed, it was marginal Labor MPs tended to be more likely to Twitter, whereas the opposition, it seems to be a team, people getting the team's message out, because they tend, it's marginal lower house MPs are unlike the less likely to tweet.
Your ears are burning.
Here I am. That's in the back. Sorry, I
came from the door. And you've been mentioned.
Hi, I'm Diana Boyer. I'm a visiting scholar from the U.S., working at the ANU. And you have suggested there are a lot of disadvantages to tweeting, particularly if you're a politician. Tweeting before you fully think and things like that. Sharing something that might bite you later. Have you really thought about some of the, obviously there are advantages we've heard from others. What about the advantage of sort of being out there first? I mean, so instant and so possible to, if you know your audience, which I guess you never can fully know, but what kind of advantages might there be? Maybe not just for politicians, but in general.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I'll write it down and think about it. That's one of the questions I need to answer. I can't really give much of an opinion on it, except I just think that people don't really know what they're doing, do they? They hope that they are doing something. We'll never really know whether they're really doing what they think they're doing. But one of the things I'm interested in looking at is people's opinions before the election and after the election. Everyone's mindset changes. So.
You mentioned someone being hacked. Does that happen quite a bit? Is that fairly common in Twitter?
Well, since I've been following two weeks, I've noticed two just of the people I followed, and they were both young females. So if they could get hacked, I guess it's fairly easy to do.
But what is hacking? Are you talking about identity theft or actually hacking into someone's account? I think it's before.
Right. I was using Nicholas's word.
Because I think it's just...
Whatever that was.
Just putting up a new profile and calling yourself someone else. But that's not truly hacking.
No. These were their account. Someone had managed to work out their password, I think.
I think it's just a virus. It's not really
the password. Right, but they were specifically targeted, weren't they?
Actually, this is pretty easy to answer. Usually what happens is someone gets a message and it says, hi, I saw this photo of you, and you click through, and it's actually a Twitter application that says, do you want to allow permission to this? And people just go, oh, yeah, so they allow it. And then that application just gets the username.
It's not like a password. There's a lot of click on the wrong thing. It's like a
computer virus. Yeah. That's happening a lot on Facebook at the moment as well. And there's actually a really good article around identity theft and crime around this area that I strongly encourage people to read. But at the same time, I also say it's a lot of benefit, so...
Maybe we can get that into the library to get out.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Tweet it
to you now. Well, please, Miles Goodman. I'm just interested in this 140-character limit. Now, it seems to me that the quality of political debate has declined in recent times. Does this 140-character limit sort of match the attention span of your average politician, or do you think it's a limiting factor?
Well, it probably matches the attention span of the average person who thinks about politics. Or it's appropriate to the way politics is discussed these days, isn't it? I mean, it's not policy heavy. It's glib comments, which is the way analysis of politics tends to be these days. So, and I'm sure it's not going to improve that, is it? It's going to.
So the long-term effect on democracy, do you feel, will be a positive or negative effect? fact?
I don't answer big questions. It's a big, you know, these are big questions, democracy. But I will address it in the somehow in the book.
I just wanted to make a comment on that. I know from our experience, see how the bottom one has like a link to a Earl? Mm-hmm. So most of the time people will tweet something that they think, like for example, see this topic, and then they'll put a link to an Earl, so it's more an alert. So, and then if people want to read more about it, they link to the Earl, and it's generally like a newspaper article or something that's a lot more in-depth. So I don't think it's so much dumbing down or anything to do against democracy. It's probably more, this is a small little grab, but like, you can either continue following and seeing all the other small little grabs, or you can, if they have a link, follow their link and see what else.
Can I say something in that paper? Can I say something about that?
Sure, please.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, the classic thing, and I was a bit like this, because I only started doing tour stuff when I got back to maternity leave in September. Classic thing for cynical people that have never engaged with Twitter is to be really snide and rude about the fact that it's only 140 characters. I'm not suggesting you were, but that's the classic. The classic line is, I've never been on it, it's only 140 characters, these people are a bunch of idiots, what are they talking about? Well, they had for lunch, you know, this is disgusting, this is a sign of breakdown of civilization, as we know. But the truth is that, as that lady was just saying, it is actually a really interesting way of pointing people in the direction of much longer articles. I mean, this is also something that I think Paul McGough said recently at a function at ANU, which I heard about secondhand, I wasn't there, but he basically said, you know, this is terrible, how can you tell the story of Afghanistan in 140 characters, this isn't right. But the point is that a lot of people link to a lot of international articles, like Michael Fullilove links all the time to really interesting articles. Like, I read a lot of things in newspapers overseas now that I might not otherwise, because you've basically been sent to this link, and then you click on the link and you get the article. And, you know, I find it for that reason really quite useful. And that is, in a sense, one of its most interesting applications for journalists, is because in a world where the traditional way, I don't buy the argument that it's completely broken down, but in the world where it's fragmenting, you know, people aren't entirely just watching the 6 o'clock news or always reading a newspaper, it's actually a really important way to drive traffic to interesting pieces of information, you know. And that's where I think Twitter's, whether it's Twitter or becomes something else or whatever, it's that thing that someone was saying about, it's an alert system. So that's why I think it's
useful. So where we used to, when I started in 93, always listen to AM and PM, there's a lot of other options now that give you breaking news or what the stories of the day is. And everyone's trying to grab that.
Hi, I'm from the Greens, and I'll just start off by saying it's a lot easier, of course, to have 100% of your MPs tweeting when there's only 5 of us. But what we in the Greens use it for very much is exactly like Sam was saying, and it fits in with what this gentleman over here was saying as well, in terms of difficulty of breaking into mainstream media and getting detailed analysis through. There's a hell of a lot of Greens voters and Greens constituents who are on Twitter and Facebook, and we find a really, really good mechanism for communicating directly with them and saying, here's a little grab, come and see our website, a blog post or a media release or a transcript of estimates, hearings or something for more information. And it works really, really effectively for us to communicate directly with our voters.
Right. And the Greens are more a community like that, aren't they? That's more appropriate, that's a good match.
But just based on what the last 3 speakers have said, I wonder if, and I don't know if you're doing this or not, but like the more pertinent question is about how people integrate these different platforms together and how they, the different members, sort of knit them together into the sort of network of their, the way they communicate with people, and that might actually be a fruitful kind of area to do some research in, to say, well, obviously Andrew Laming thinks Facebook is much better and he tweets because of he wants that association, but others do it differently, and that might actually be a useful kind of pathway to take your research in.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
I think Twitter has the potential to be a really powerful tool as many people learn to use it in a more sophisticated way, because it's a very open forum and you can actually search on topics and find out what people are thinking on a specific topic. There's also the use of hashtags, which will actually find, which not many people are using, but as that use increases, it actually makes the searching more powerful.
But why do you want to know, why do you want to know what anyone in the world is saying about a particular topic?
I think politicians want to know that. It's a very useful thing to know.
There's one thing with that feed as well, it's interesting, is if you get TweetDeck, which is just this application, you can set up permanent searches on certain topics. Now, I take the point that this sounds a little stalker-esque, but if you just say you wanted to set up a permanent search just to know what anyone was saying on Twitter at any time about, say, Julia Gillard, Kevin Rudd, or NewsPoll, you can do that, and I can have up on my screen at any time every person on Twitter and what they're saying about anything.
But again, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but 99% of it is just going to be not very valuable.
Sure, I would look at it a lot, but I think at certain points when a story is breaking, I may want to know, I may find that interesting. I may also want to know what, if there's people using Twitter that are actually newsworthy, what they're saying about something. I mean, like, why would you want to know? It's like asking, why do you want to know about anything? You know, I mean, because it's interesting. And it may be useful.
Do you reckon that, do politicians get sound bites and ideas and tactical ideas from Twitter?
Just in response to your question, why do you want to know and all of this information, I think it's fair to say that most of us have set up filters for the information that we take in from any kind of media. I mean, if you're reading 5 or 6 newspapers, as many people in Parliament House do every morning, you've got to be doing a lot of skimming and working out what you want to know. And the same goes for Twitter. Of course, there's going to be a lot of information on there that you don't necessarily want to know. You just Google it out.
But it's 99% of it, is it? It just makes
sense. I don't think it's 99%.
Do you have a concerted view on how new media use did affect or did influence the last election? The YouTube stuff was very, very entertaining and did seem to add some extra dimensions. We'll all remember the Chairman Rudd video. You may have done this on Mumble already, but do you have a view on, for example, an obvious thing one might think is drawing more active participants in following the campaign from younger age groups. Is there evidence on that?
I don't know. I mean, my instincts are quite sceptical about it making much difference, but I have a bit of a deterministic mindset, so, you know, I thought Labor would probably win, and they did win, and all that stuff was entertaining. and young people... Yeah, a lot of young people watched a lot of this stuff, and then probably half of them turned up and found they weren't on the electoral roll anyway. So, half of the other half didn't go. I'm sure there's data out there saying the YouTube had this effect on the election, but we don't really know, and it's very hard to tell.
Especially those that were in the political parties actually creating them and doing it, they were. This helped win the election, and they're a hero.
I suppose I just wanted to make another comment on the hashtags and the searches. Another thing that I suppose from the office I'm in we're starting to see is that hashtags and filtered searches are a way of people, I suppose, connecting if they have a similar view. For example, the internet filter has been huge on Twitter, and people's views on the internet filter are both for and against. I suppose connecting those people on those issues, and they're starting their own community together. So people they may not even know, but they see have a similar view on them, they're connecting and they're starting to form, I suppose, smaller communities where they might have similar issues, and starting to, I suppose, together start campaigning on issues such as that might affect them, because they're generally young, like some of them are younger people as well, and some of them are more tech savvy people, and internet filter for people who are, a lot of people on Twitter is probably there. But I suppose going further on, as Ms. Leader was saying, when more people get to use it,
that could be a basis of more people starting smaller community-based campaigns and having a way of connecting with people.
So does your office keep tab in a way of what people are thinking by the use of these hash?
Not really. I mean, my boss is Senator Lundy, and she has like a particular interest in ICT. So she and Gov 2.0 technology. So I suppose the comments she gets and the people she are following are particularly interested in Gov 2.0. So she kind of can keep an eye on what those people, and a lot of them are advocates in those areas across Australia and across the world, are thinking on those issues. But I'm sure other people would have other issues that they would probably be interested in keeping tabs on with those communities starting.
Can I just bring a point in? I mean, there are gatekeepers and people that are the initiative in my electorate. I have gatekeepers in different communities that are the people that actually make a difference. If they talk to me, I should listen. That's how I take it, because they do influence their communities. Is this what you were mentioning then about...
I think so, but I think it's more nationally. Like, it goes outside of your electorate. Like, yes, you do have people in your own electorate, but I suppose with Kate and with Gov 2.0, she's more looking at it as a national and international platform rather than... I mean, she does her constituent-based work as well, but she probably doesn't use it for her constituent-based work. Her main platform is nationally, internationally, and keeping up with what other people are thinking of Gov 2.0 tools. But it would be interesting to see where it goes in the future as more people
emerge as a leader in that in that area.
And I mean, another one that we're seeing is also the Comm Super and Defence Pensions, because a lot of that age group are also on the internet, and they're starting to form small communities over issues such as that too. And that affects our interests, so that's why we're interested in that one.
Do you suspect this is another way of mobilising the base, whereas you used to have, you know, branch meetings once a month, that somehow or another you've got people who are really concerned about an issue, as was just being said, people who are, you know, participating in the political process at a general level, rather than being broadcast out, the message is narrowcast, as the Greens are doing. And it is actually a way of validating ordinary people's contributions to the political process and keeping them mobilised and informed and interested and participating.
Yes, I'm sure there is a lot of truth in that. I mean, it obviously can't be secret, like a branch meeting. It can't be too open, because anyone who wants to can see what you're saying. But I'm sure keeping the enthusiasm up and so on is an important part.
Well, I think we've worked ourselves through. Thank you very much, Pete. Is there anything else you want to...
No, just thanks. There were some great ideas and thoughts. Yeah, that was great. So thank you all for coming.
I think we all know. Wish you well, Peter.